You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Another, just to sort of give people an idea even more of how extreme this stuff is, there's another story about a woman named Diane Brimble. She's found dead on the ship, and the family, they have to stay on board the ship for an additional few days, because this isn't like a plane where if someone dies on a plane, they land at the nearest airport. These people are essentially trapped on the ship, you know, until it goes to the next port. There's no sort of, there seems to be no emergency. It goes back to this whole idea of, like, they don't want to scare the other passengers, or they don't want to have it affect their PR, so they're just like, you know what, you're just one of 1,000 people who are on the ship, you know, lady or whatever. So
lot more to the Diane Brimble story than that.
Oh, yeah, I know, but that was the point that really sort of outraged me that
she was given a rape drug, and in theory raped by 8 guys on the ship, and she died, and there was no inquiry for 4 years on her death, and the individuals that were involved never have been sentenced to anything. That, and in fact, Mark Brimble is on the executive committee of ICV on our board, but we also have a separate chapter in Australia, International Cruise Victims of Australia, that Mark leads. And we're moving in Australia to get press. In fact, if people go on our website on the home page, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but Dateline of Australia did a show earlier this year. It did an excellent show right on our, it's right in the middle of our home page. And then 60 Minutes of Australia.
Yeah.
Literally flew to Phoenix, and we did an interview, and they did a terrific show. There was one on a news story this morning. It's the press, as you're doing, in getting this information out to outrage the public, that action be taken. And we are getting that kind of press. Where the cruise lines are effective is in Washington. In July, they hosted a lunch for 85 congressmen. They recently made a gift in the last month of $50,000 to the ranking member of the Senate Transportation Committee for projects in his state, the state of Maryland. They gave the Coast Guard $5,000 for a charity. That is where they have really spent their money.
Yeah.
But overall, they've put out some things recently that says that people like myself, I'll use the term they used in their press release.
Yeah.
It says a handful of biased industry critics, I guess that would include me, continues to use the mainstream media to distort the cruise industry's strong record on reporting crimes. Well, you can't manipulate the mainstream media. You know, I can't manipulate you. I can't manipulate any major network. We just tell them the truth.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, if any, they're the ones doing the manipulating. It's unbelievable. It's just,
well, they can't manipulate anymore because we're here to, you know, build a library of information.
Exactly.
But anyway, the Diane Brimble story has really caught that part of the world, and actually, it's another story that's gone all over the world. England is the Corian family. Australia's got the Brimble family. You know, the United States has got cases like my daughter in the Smith case and other cases. It takes those kinds of headline cases for the public to start to become aware of the issues.
Now, I got like a sort of a two-parter, I guess you could say. I presume maybe because these all end up as sort of unsolved cases, that there's no legal liability for these cruise lines. Like, you can't turn around and sue them because you know, somebody disappeared on the ship, or even if somebody died, presumably. I mean, there's no, is there any like negligence at work there?
Well, I mean, the cruise lines are sued, but it's a very tough avenue to pursue.
Yeah.
I mean, number one, you got to go to Florida. Number two, we took legal action in Marion's case, and their retort was they're under no investigation to do anything. Well, we ended up, in effect, to sue them for lying to us. So there is legal action, but that's a process that is full of risk, very dangerous. Women are raped. The evidence isn't preserved. the cruise line said, well, it's a he said, she said, and they're difficult cases to pursue. And the cruise lines know that, and they know how to protect themselves from those cases.
Yeah.
And if you had independent police, then you got a whole different story.
Right, right. And has all this publicity about these crimes on these ships, has that, have you seen any sort of negative effect on the bottom line for them? Are the numbers dropping on people going on? Obviously, the economy, I'm sure, plays a big hand in all this as well. I mean, who has the money to even go on a cruise nowadays? But do you, have you seen any sort of effect from the publicity on the industry as far as, you know?
I'll give you some observations.
Mm-hmm.
Starting a couple years ago, the cruise ships started moving their ships to Europe from the United States. And we put out an update last year. The number of ports that they left here in the United States, they say, we'll go to greener pastures in Europe. They're not aware of these issues. Well, number one, that European market isn't what they thought it was going to be. Royal Caribbean just pulled 25% of their ships out of Europe. They had the Costa Concordia event in January. And that just opened up Pandora's box on the cruise line industry and the way the crew behaved and the whole thing. So that in the second quarter of this year, Royal Caribbean, instead of making $100 million as they did a year ago, lost $1 million. Carnival, instead of making hundreds of millions of dollars, made $3 million.
They still
broke even. But it is having a financial effect, in my opinion, on the cruise ships. Now they're trying to go to Europe. We'll go to China. You know, it's like chasing a rabbit.
Right, right.
You know, we'll find some other place. But they're going to run out of places to send their ships because the press is picking it up worldwide, and they're giving. They'll literally almost give the cruise away. For very little money, which sounds like a great deal, because they want you on there for the revenue from the alcohol and from gambling.
Right,
and the things they're selling on the ships. So that you can get cruises for $200.
Oh, God.
Cheap. Because once that cruise ship leaves and it's empty, you can't refill the seat.
That's true, yeah.
So they want people on there for, you know, to sell them alcohol.
Like floating casinos.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Scary, scary stuff. Well, speaking of scary, I mean, there's a story in there. I don't know if the person identified themselves, but the woman's daughter was offered a free cruise through Facebook, and it was really, really suspicious and very spooky and sort of chilling. I guess talk a little bit about that, because, again, it gets into this whole idea that this might be some kind of cover for human trafficking or God knows what.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things in what we're doing are the various stories that we get.
Mm-hmm.
This was a most unusual story of a mother whose daughter won on Facebook a free cruise. In fact, the ticket was paid for, but the mother became suspicious. You know, here's a young, attractive, you know, you've got your photograph on Facebook. You know, she's an attractive young woman. All of a sudden, she wins this free Facebook contest, free cruise, and the ticket's paid for. But then the mother says, we need to understand this a little bit better. So she starts investigating it and can't come up with the person that's really behind this contest. And then she talks to the cruise lines, and they say, if I were you, I wouldn't let your daughter go on that cruise.
Yeah.
So who in the world is buying tickets for young women and to go on a cruise just out of the generosity of their heart? And when they couldn't even check the individuals out, fortunately she didn't do it. But I think it sends a warning to other people. A lot of young women would take that on a bet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you can only wonder how many have, how many, you know.
I'm sure that many have. And then what happens to them?
You don't even want to think about it, really. You just don't. Now, how about this one here with the Kenneth Williams? They're on the Carnival Cruise Line. The Carnival people on the ship, they stop in Jamaica, and they push this sort of Carnival tour of Jamaica thing and guarantee safety and all that. And then when they're on the tour, there's just this crazy robbery. And just stunning stuff. And again, it goes to, like I said earlier, this is a myriad of stuff that's going on here, folks. Not just murders and missing people, but crimes that suggest that this is orchestrated by people, in a sense, some of this stuff.
Yeah, well, and it is. What people don't realize that the corporations, cruise line corporations, have set themselves up. So I'll give you another example. You've got a doctor on a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
Got a nice uniform on, looks like the crew members, you know, like one of the officers or crew members. He is an independent contractor and does not work for the cruise line. The reason they do that is that if something happens, they're not responsible. You have to go after this individual doctor who, he could be from India or wherever. So they made him an independent contractor. They've done the same on excursions that they promote and sell and might make, 40% commission on selling these excursions, but when something happens, they say, well, it's an independent contractor, we're not responsible. In the case of this Kenneth Williams, this guy was a former police officer, and his tour bus was stopped, as I understand it, and they were robbed, and his 9-year-old daughter was traumatized when one of the individuals doing the crime put a pistol to her head. And yet, nothing happens. The cruise ships don't take responsibility, even though they're the ones that promoted it and got the Williams family and other families. We have a lot of snorkeling type excursions.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got several of those where people have been lost. We've got some where they didn't count the number of people coming back that they left with, and people have been laid out there and died, and they're not responsible for it. But something else which is most important that people do not realize, that if you are involved in something on a ship and you die, the cruise lines, there's a law that was passed in 1920, which in effect says they have no responsibility, even though they're at fault, if you die as a result of an accident or something they did wrong on a cruise ship. Now, that's rather astounding.
Yeah.
If you're injured, you might be able to take legal action against them. If you die, DOSHA, Death of the High Seas Act, prevents you from taking legal action other than burial expenses under two circumstances. One is that if you're retired or you're young. Now, what's the correlation between the two? They say your life has no economic value. So as a result, they owe you nothing other than maybe some burial expenses, even though they're at fault. Oh, can you imagine a cruise ship sinking? And because of DOSHA, and it's their fault, you can't take action because of the Death on the High Seas Act? We did our best to put that in the bill. And the cruise lines fought us tooth and nail. Because that would mean that they would be responsible. If something happens and people are accidentally killed and it's their fault, they would be responsible, which they should be.
Right, right. Well,
but
like in this Ken Williams story, you know, just to flesh it out a little bit more, you know, he, after the event, after the cruise, the family's completely traumatized by all this, and Carnival Cruise is all apologetic until it comes time to be responsible for what happened, and then it gets into a whole different ball game, and they're not interested in helping out with any of the sort of therapeutic treatments or anything for the kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know his daughter was traumatized. He was traumatized, and I mean, I told you earlier in Marion's story, you think they're working with you until you go to take action.
Yeah.
And then it swings the other way as far as it can swing. And they play hardball. They're lawyers on all of these things. Now, they've given the risk management a new title. They're called customer care representatives. We get away from risk management. We'll call them a customer care representative. So a woman's been raped. So the customer care representative comes up and puts her arm around him. And the woman tells this woman what happened to her. Guess what's happening to that information? It's going to the lawyers for the cruise lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the woman's most vulnerable spot, they're telling this person they think is there to help them, as we thought the person that we were working with that was there to help us, was really gathering information to give to the lawyers to limit the liability of the cruise lines.
It makes you just, again, it just makes me angry just to hear all this. I can tell you, Kendall, I don't think I'll ever go on one of these cruises. You really would have to twist my arm to get me to go on one of these things, because it's scary.
Well, it doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah. Oh,
we want is accountability that steps are being taken to protect the safety of the passengers. And in the bill that we passed, we are finding more and more that the requirements put in the bill are being ignored by the regulators and not being followed up on and not reporting the crimes and not putting the man overboard systems in place. And frankly, that's disheartening. But they've built a culture over the years that's been very effective in the people that regulate them by hiring them and having meetings every 2 months that we think are a conflict of interest. And it's a whole culture that's been successfully built up. But as the public becomes aware of this, and according to CLIA's own statements, they are, because somehow I and others are manipulating the mainstream press, which is a joke. Maybe some of these things will swing in our direction. And I think they are swinging in our direction, but I can only tell you, it's a fight every day. And when we see wordings have been changing the intention of a bill on reporting crimes, it makes us angry.
Oh, and rightfully so.
And how somebody could go in, whether it's the FBI and Coast Guard has sent it off, Kerry has said, or the cruise line industry, clearly not in the interest of the public, but in the interest of the cruise lines.
It's just, again, I'm left speechless by a lot of this material, because it's such an uphill battle. This is such a monolithic industry. Hats off to the international cruise victims for continuing to fight them on all this stuff. Another story on the website that really stood out to me sort of gives you an idea of, as you kind of said, the culture aboard these ships as well. This guy, David Gabriel, he's there with like his 9-year-old son,
right.
His whole family, and some random nefarious person is following him and his son around, and then eventually he gets separated from his son, and he sees his son with this abductor, and he punches the guy, he holds him down. Eventually, he can't wait any longer for help to come, and then when it gets reported to the ship, they throw him off the ship.
Yeah, right in the middle of nowhere. I mean, his family's on the ship. He's given 5 minutes notice to get off the ship, and left. I mean, who would do that?
It just goes to this whole idea that, in their eyes, you're a statistic, and they need to get you out of there as fast as possible, or they have to keep this thing moving, in a sense. That's another thing kind of stood out from the stories about the people with the scuba who disappeared during the scuba trips. It's like, hey, if they don't turn up in time for us when we leave, then that's their problem. That's their attitude.
I mean, if you're taking a scuba trip and you take 16 people out, you better make sure you take 16 people back.
Right. And the scary part is if they come back with 15 people, they don't care. They just go on to the next stop. And they write it off to, oh, well, maybe they maybe they fell in love with Jamaica and ran away there. It's like, come on, cut the crap.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting industry how they've separated themselves from the excursions, from the medical care, and so many of the things that they do to avoid liability instead of accepting liability. And if you screw up, you screw up and you accept responsibility for it. That's a lesson the industry is learning very slowly.
Yeah.
But more and more people are becoming aware of it. And we appreciate you're doing a show on the subject, because you're going to reach people, every time we do something, we reach people, and, hopefully it'll be beneficiary.
Absolutely. Now, one of the people who, it's not necessarily a story, but he sort of lends his support to the whole movement here is Michael Groves. He's a former deck officer on one of these cruise ships. Now, have you, he says I guess you could say supportive post, that he can't really talk about anything, which is kind of frightening in and of itself. You wonder what kind of restrictions are placed on these folks. But have you heard much, you know, in the way of like off the record, you know, at the bar talk from people who have worked on these cruise ships as to really how pervasive this problem is?
Well, we have on our board, on our executive committee, the former head of security for Princess Cruise Lines. These are the kinds of talents that have come to us. And Michael was a security officer on a cruise ship. So they're bringing us a story that they have a unique perspective on. And, one of our members who's in England has told the story how he's tried to seal a crime scene. Somebody's been raped or something. And they go in the next day and the room's been scrubbed by the cruise lines. You know, the very thing he asked them not to do. And it's a story that happens over and over and over. And in the case of Michael Groves, he was injured by a pirate attack. And that brings up an interesting another story as part of our legislation.
Uh-huh.
All ships, if you read the bill, are required to add an acoustical sound device. Now, that's what was on Michael Groves' ship. And that device allows you to focus a sound at an approaching pirate ship,
Vessel.
Yeah, vessel, and the sound drives them away. It's like sending a laser.
Yeah.
So the bill required that to be added on all cruise ships. Well, guess what? There was some wording added by somebody. And I'll give you about two guesses who it was, and the first one probably wouldn't count, that if the Coast Guard determines that they're in a high-risk area, well, on the surface, that, you know, you got to put it on if you're in a high-risk area. Well, I noticed earlier this year the Coast Guard wasn't requiring it be put on a cruise ship. And I said, well, why not? I mean, New York Harbor is a high-risk area. You know, you got the World Trade Center. Well, they said, that's top secret. We can't tell you what our definition of high risk is. Well, later on in another meeting, they admitted they don't count terrorism as high risk. So whoever put that wording in knew that. So it nullified the provision. So that cruise ships, instead of having this protection against a terrorist attack, are now required to put it on. And it's not an expensive piece of equipment. It costs $35,000. Maybe for one piece, maybe you need three of them on a ship. It's a peanut item. And that's what Groves used to drive away the pirates that attacked his cruise ship.
I don't even know why. See, why would they not even want them then? If it's not expensive and it you know.
Hey, you know something? You'll have to ask them that.
Yeah. It's just.
I mean, logic would say.
Right.
Our board member, who is head of security for Princess Cruise Lines, required that to be put on cruise ships, on Princess cruise ships. And that saved that particular cruise ship. And this guy, if you go on our website, you'll see a book that he's published, right on the front page. He is a real security expert. It just seems like it's a penny wise and pound foolish not to have that on voluntarily.
Right. Exactly, yeah. It there's so many good reasons to have it. I can't understand what their reasoning is not to have it.
Well, so, probably because it costs $25,000-$30,000.
I guess if you're only making $3 million in a year, then I guess if you got to outfit all those ships, maybe it does cut into the bottom line. But
yeah, well, there's an interesting story I just got this morning that they've just determined that for the last year or so, if I interpret these stories right, the Russians had a sub going around the Caribbean, which obviously a cruise ship. In fact, if you look at my Senate testimony, which is on our website, you'll find the last 8 pages deals with the subject of terrorism as a risk to a cruise ship.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a perfect risk. They're big. You can take down thousands of people at one time, and you don't have to be a submarine to do it. You can be a rubber boat that comes up and attaches an explosive to the ship.
Right, right. Yeah, well, you know, those ships were, those American ships were attacked in Yemen before 9/11, so it's not like these crazies haven't come up with these kind of ideas before. It's amazing that it hasn't happened yet, you know, given how lax all this security is.
Yeah, well, it will happen. Anything that can happen will eventually happen, I think. I don't want it to happen, and let's hope it doesn't happen. And let's hope they take some steps, like putting these devices on their ships, to help prevent it from happening. But to ignore it and change a provision in a bill so you don't have to do it is beyond reason in my mind.
Right, right. And just to take people into the sort of into the now moment, if you will, let's say, like, for instance, you and I are on the deck of one of these ships and I go overboard. You know, what's the standard operating procedure, and then what really happens? Because it stands to reason, I don't know how fast these ships are going, but if I go overboard, by the time you can get to anybody to stop the ship, it's already gone quite a distance anyway.
Well, the answer is, the best chance you possibly have is you know exactly when it happens and exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can take action. And that's what companies are proposed that they have systems to do.
Right.
But so oftentimes, they'll look 8 hours for somebody on that ship before they even call the FBI or the Coast Guard to fly out. And guess who pays the Coast Guard to go out and search for these people? It's the taxpayers.
Right.
Not the cruise lines. But your best hope is you know exactly when it happens and where it happens. Then you might have a chance. Other than that, sending an airplane out to fly to the Caribbean is just wasting hundreds of thousands of dollars because they never find them.
Right, right. And the scary part is, you know, in this example I just used, it's you and me standing there. If you're by yourself and you go overboard, forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're standing there, you might have a chance that they throw you a life raft or something and are able to, you know, immediately take action. You got a better chance. But if you're alone and they don't know it, your chances are slim and none. And one other thing I might just mention is that people going overboard, so oftentimes alcohol is an issue.
Yeah.
We have a Lindsay O'Brien on our website, girl from Ireland. She was a family, they had 4 daughters, and her family took this cruise. The girl was 15 years old. In 1 hour, they gave her 10 drinks.
Ah.
She went to the railing, threw up, and fell overboard, and that was it.
My God. And so if, now, we sort of have been talking about how these people are, the victims here are treated as a statistic. So let's go back to that scenario we're talking about. You and me, we're on the deck. I fall over. You run and get help. What is their reaction? Do they stop the ship? Do they turn around? Do they call out? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, they should immediately. I think there's even IMO regulation saying they should stop that ship immediately and go back and look for the party. I think there are regulations. And once in a while, they will find somebody. If you have the perfect situation of somebody going overboard, somebody seeing it, and there's immediate notification. But I also know of other cases in the Corian family. It's my understanding that when they called it in that she was missing, they gave the Coast Guard the wrong coordinates. So they were looking at some place 40 miles away from where the ship was.
Oh, my God.
You know, I can't verify that, but I'm under that impression in talking with Mike.
And from my understanding, from the articles I've read and from the stories I've read and the stuff I've looked at on the ICV website, is that even if they have this you know, closed circuit monitoring of the ship, there aren't people actually watching it.
No.
They only go back and look at it later if they need to. It's not like a security situation where there's someone tasked with watching all the time so they can see somebody go overboard.
No, you're exactly right. They don't monitor the CTVs, CCTVs. And only later on do they go back and take a look at the various videos to try and figure out if they've got something showing somebody going overboard. Now, the one thing that will bother me the rest of my life on Marion's case is, why did they lie to us that there was no video and only admit it 3 years later? Now, if they, as I said earlier in this interview, if there was a video and there were videos and it showed something happening, then that's it. I mean, a family wants closure.
Right.
And when they say, well, there's no video, we don't know what happened. My goodness, that just, leaves you with a nightmare you never can get past.
Right. And, you know, not to get too dark here, but it stands to reason that there's something on that video they didn't want you to see or didn't want to admit to or didn't want to see the light of day.
Well, that's the only conclusion you could come to.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
Is there was something there, if there's something there that works to their advantage, you'll get the video. If it doesn't work to their advantage, they say they don't have it. That's just my personal experience.
Oh, I'm just aghast at this. I really am. It's just, it is really something else. I can imagine, the stories you hear and just being in this realm, for so long. I can't imagine, how you can stomach this.
When a new victim calls, they want to share their story and we want to listen to their story. But I must admit, by the time they get done, I'm whipped.
Yeah.
But it's the same, I'm hearing the same story over and over, whether it's a rape, somebody going overboard, there's no victim, no answers. That's probably one of the more effective things we've done with our site. And it's not a fancy website. It's got a lot of material on it.
Oh, it's got tons of stuff.
Yeah, is that we've posted these victim stories. And they're powerful stories, each one of them. And I would say more than half of the victims that we have don't post their stories. You know, I've never gone through and counted how many posts. Some people just, woman's raped, she doesn't want to post it. Sometimes we'll post it as a John Jane Doe or something like that. But they don't want to, you know, go public with the story, so we don't post it. But when people go on there and they see these various stories and the various things that have happened, that's a powerful message.
Right. And another thing, you've kind of mentioned it, and it comes up over and over again in these stories, is, you know, we've talked about people going overboard, we've talked about people missing, we've talked about mysterious deaths, a lot of druggings that seem to happen on these ships, too. So you can only imagine, we talked about the lawlessness of these places, the excessive alcohol, you can only imagine what kind of drugs are floating around on these ships.
Well, there's a story out in the last week that, it's being posted. I don't know if it's posted yet. I think it may be.
Is this the Disney cocaine story?
Yeah, the Disney story. My goodness, of all places to be having drug parties going on, that's the worst place.
Yeah.
And they're not unique.
What's that?
The Disney ships.
Oh, right. You're saying just because it's Disney doesn't mean it's any safer than Carnival or Princess?
Yeah, they're all, I think, and there's been some articles. There was one done by a writer who actually got into the crew area and did a story. It was posted in a national magazine of all the things that are going down in the crew area, you know, from sex parties to drinking, the open bar, you know, all of these things. And that's a world that the passenger never sees.
Right.
And getting to the Costa Concordia, one of the roles the captain plays on a cruise ship is not driving the cruise ship. It's not like an airline pilot driving an airline. He's there to socialize with the passengers and have dinner with them, have drinks with them. Well, an airline pilot that's flying a 747 across the ocean, if he had a drink 24 hours before the plane left, they put him in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, here's the captain. He's got a young girlfriend, you know, drinking at dinner, in charge of the lives of 4,000 people. No wonder he hit a rock.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, yeah, you touched on sort of also that world underneath the ship, in the bowels of the ship. It's like a whole, I mean, we talk about it's like a city on the sea. You can only imagine that there's sort of a little, a subsection or a sub-city, if you will, beneath the ship where the crew is. And you can only imagine what goes on down there. And I mean, again, we talked about some of these people have been on these ships for like years. So it's just a whole nother world. And I can only imagine that there's a sort of a, there's got to be a certain sense of separation between the crew and the passengers, and almost a disdainfulness in sense, I bet, from some of these folks.
Well, they're third world countries. What are they going to do? I mean, they're on there 7 days a week, week after week. You know, and if you had any tendency to alcohol or drugs, you got to do something to entertain themselves. And I'm not saying that's what they should be doing, but those areas should be monitored. There's an area that should be monitored by independent police.
Right.
Because if the ship gets into trouble and you got, you know, I read one article, I can't verify it, that at any given time, 40% of the crew is drunk. You know, I don't like to say things. It was out of an article, so I'm just going to say that's the way I recall that article. But, yeah, that's their entertainment at night.
Yeah.
You got an open bar, cheap drinks. You got to do something. And there should be at least independent people down there watching what's going on. Because the crew is in the Costa Concordia. When that ship got in trouble, the crew was first to go.
Exactly, yeah.
They were worried about themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, you know, they're, like I said, I mean, they're on these ships year-round practically, and the passengers are just sort of passing through. It's very sort of territorial in a weird way, you know. It's very interesting in that
regard. Yeah, well, it's a different way of life.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I've heard stories, too. I'm sure you've sort of heard these, too. And I don't know, I can't speak to the specifics of it, but I've seen, like, on shows like Dateline and stuff where these couples go on cruises and the wife will go missing, or they'll say she went overboard or something, and these shows always kind of make it out that the spouse did it. Whether they did it or not is open to conjecture and stuff, but it seems like there's a whole nother thing going on here where it could be like, hey, instead of taking out a hit on my wife, I'm going to take her on this Disney cruise and push her overboard, and they're never going to...
Yeah. Well, Chris Shea, who really started the first hearing, said it's the perfect place to commit a crime on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to do somebody in, that's the perfect place to do it. Somebody disappears, and there's just a lot of those cases. There's a girl in Canada that went on a two-day cruise and just vanished, and she was with a boyfriend that they were in a fight. I mean, there's all kinds of those cases.
Right.
A woman named Mindy Jordan went missing within the first day, and she was with a boyfriend that the relationship was not good. And I'm not saying he did anything, but there's suspicions raised by, you know, certain members of the family that things happened. So, anyway.
Yeah, the scary part is, you can't say that he did anything, but you can say that there's been no proper investigation.
Right.
That's the difficult part of it all.
Right.
Two things kind of came into my head. You know, like we said, if not for people, the family members of these victims and stuff, there's probably countless other people that have gone missing or died or been victim of these crimes that don't get reported. And again,
absolutely.
You know, you get the crew. I can't even imagine the... If they're this callous with you and the other victims of these crimes, can you imagine, you know, say a crew member goes missing or dies? I can't even imagine that they even put much thought or effort into getting to the bottom of those situations.
My reaction is I would tend to agree with that. And we have stories of crew members. We have a gentleman in Italy that went missing, and his sisters made major efforts. There's one in Brazil where They finally determined the girl was murdered, but I don't think anything's ever happened to anybody. And, you know, it's just a whole different culture.
Well, we've talked about all this myriad of problems. So I guess, and you said, you know, when you guys took this to Congress, you brought solutions. So, you know, what can and needs to be done to really improve or solve this whole issue?
Well, and we really need the public support on this,
mm-hmm.
is that we have passed legislation in Washington, which is a major step forward. The challenge we face is having it that the actions be taken in line with the law.
Right.
And that's where people can communicate with their congressional people, and we are communicating. But when Congress knows that the public expects these things to happen, it's not pushed under the table, regardless of what the cruise lines may be doing to support their position in Washington. So we need that help. Number two, our bill only protects a U.S. citizen coming or leaving the United States. So if they go to the Mediterranean and they take a cruise, they're not covered at all under the law. And our goal is that these laws need to be put in place worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And we need resources to do that.
Yeah.
We've been to Europe twice this year. I actually have an invitation to a meeting in September I should go to, but there's costs involved with all this. So financial help to ICV, whether it's a small amount or whatever, just would be invaluable to us as we move this ball forward. But it's an issue of worldwide crime that has never been addressed properly.
Right.
And to start to address that, we are doing that. We are starting to address it. But we need the support of your listeners, and we need the support of congressional people that your listeners can communicate with. If this show goes overseas, Victim Support of Europe has taken this on as a project. Victim Support of the UK is deeply involved, and we are moving the process. Actually, it's amazing how far we've come, but it's a matter of telling the story to more and more people and the ultimate effect it'll have on the cruise industry if these things don't take place.
Right, right. Now, you've mentioned here over the course of the interview that these ships don't have any sort of independent oversight or police force. Is that a possibility, or
Absolutely.
Is that just something that it's going to take literally an act of Congress to have done? I mean,
well, it'll
we need like air marshal type people on these.
It'll take an act of the UN, and the UN has a division called the International Maritime Organization in London, and mm-hmm. I was there in May, and we have made our first visit there and had a presentation. And they were shocked at the issue of crime on cruise ships. I mean, they're worried about how the ship is built, but not about the passengers.
Right.
So there is a division of the UN, the World Society of Victimologists, which is the top victim organization professionals in the world, has come out supporting efforts on our part to have the International Maritime Organization take international steps to put in place regulations to protect the citizens of all countries. It shouldn't make a difference to somebody getting on a cruise ship, whether they're from Italy or the United States or wherever they're from.
Mm-hmm.
They should be assured protection. And the third world countries where these ships are flagged has been a joke.
Yeah. And you do have one section on your website I want to highlight before we let you go here, and that's the Don't Snooze Before You Cruise. This is tips for people going on cruises, because we've talked a lot about what the government and, you know, the law enforcement agencies need to do, but what can everyday people do, aside from not even going on these cruises, but if they're going to go on a cruise, what should they be aware of, and you know, any sort of information we can get to them would obviously help try and prevent future incidents.
Yeah, well, if they go on our website, they can go on the right-hand column and see the warnings of issues they need to be aware of. And the one point I want to make,
mm-hmm.
as a result of the law that's been passed in the United States and I assume probably most of your audience is American.
Yeah.
They now have rights that they didn't have. They have the right to call the FBI on a confidential basis from the cruise ship to report the crime and not go through the security of the cruise ship. They have the right to call a victims organization independent from the cruise ship in the United States. They have the right to contact a lawyer. They have the same rights that if a crime occurred here in the United States, you would have. You could go to directly to the police. You don't go through an intermediary.
Right, right.
And there are support organizations, and you'd get a lawyer. So they have those rights today that they can exercise. But they have to be well aware of the fact that they can't assume that everything's going to go great on a cruise ship and turn their kids loose. You know, you got the issue of alcohol and et cetera. And if they're on a ship that is not coming in or out of the United States, they only have the rights to take action by a third world country, and that is not satisfactory.
Absolutely not. I think the two big takeaways here for folks who would be going on these cruises is always be aware, you know, be on guard, folks, because this is not as safe as you may think. And the other thing is, really, I would say just don't rely on or trust the cruise ship company. Don't put your safety in their hands. I think that's the two things that are the big takeaway.
And to operate in teams and not go out on your own, that's where you really can get in trouble.
Yeah. Ultimately, where are you and the ICV going from here and into the future? Further attempts to obviously get the word out about this and more legislation?
Well, number one is to get the regulations working here in the United States in line with the bill that was passed.
Right.
And that's turning to be a more difficult issue than I thought. You think you pass a bill, but and you've done it all. That's only the beginning. Then you have to work with the enforcers to take the necessary action. And there are fines that if cruise lines don't do certain things, that they should be fined. And I read something on an editorial in the New York Times. It said a law without fines is not a law if there's no penalties.
Yeah.
For not doing the right thing. But the second thing is that we are truly moving this message around the world. And actually have made a significant progress just in the last year. It was only after we got the U.S. bill passed. But we need your friends that may be listening to this in other countries to help support us in these efforts as we try to get the laws put in place and the protection around the world. The ideal item, and you mentioned this, if you go to our website, to the community tab, and you click on that, you'll go to a page that shows that independent security, how it can be set up on a cruise ship. And that's the ultimate, potentially ultimate item that would really be helpful.
Right, right.
So when things happen, somebody is there to protect your interest and not the interest of the cruise lines.
Exactly, exactly. Well, on that note, we're going to call it a day here, Kendall, because you got to get going. We've already talked at length about this, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. The time has flown by. You know, I actually am kind of hastened to say I enjoyed it because I'm going to hang up the phone and sort of still be disgruntled about this cruise ship industry. But I can't thank you enough for your yeoman's work in getting the word out, you and all the folks at the International Cruise Victims Organization. Up until a few years ago, the lawlessness of these cruise ships was really so frighteningly underreported. And I think that the work that you guys are doing are not just going to make it safer for people in the future, but have already made it a lot safer for people who have gone on cruises already and know about the potential dangers there. So, I mean, you're doing a tremendous service, and I can only hope that in the long run, you win this fight against these cruise ships to be more accountable for themselves and to be more responsible for the people that are paying to go on these trips. And like I said, I can't thank you enough, and I can't give you enough kudos for your tireless work, and not only getting the word out, but getting to the bottom of all this. So thank
Tim,
you.
Well, Tim, I appreciate that. I would just say that we've done it with no paid staff, with just volunteers, but volunteers with a passion. And any support your listeners can offer us is obviously most helpful.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for all the time, and thanks again for coming on the show, and let's keep in touch and, you know, keep on this story.
Yep.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to Kendall Carver for coming on the show, giving us so much time, and for providing so much insight into this crime wave on the high seas. For more information on the International Cruise Victims Organization, check out the website www.internationalcruisevictims.org. Pretty simple, all one word, internationalcruisevictims.org. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we've got three emails here, so let's just dive on into the mailbag. First one comes from Chris, no hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. I want to tell you how much I enjoyed the Neil Arnold interview. I would not be surprised if some of your listeners have a problem with some of Arnold's opinions, so I wanted to weigh in and tell you that I thought it was great. I also wanted to suggest that you get Alan Greenfield on at some point. I have heard a few podcasts with him, and he seems like a fascinating guy, so I would love to hear him on your show. Thanks for the hard work. Cheers, Chris. Thank you for writing in, Chris. I appreciate the props on the Neil Arnold interview. Thankfully, we did not get any negative feedback to what Neil had to say. Maybe that's a testament to the open-minded nature of the BOA Audio listeners, in that they gave serious consideration to the possibility that many of these monsters in the world of cryptozoology are actually mind projections and tulpas. We have to definitely consider the possibility that the entire UFO phenomenon is some kind of mental projection. If we don't, I think we're just doing a disservice to getting to the bottom of the UFO enigma. I confess here that I do not know much at all about Alan Greenfield, but I will check out his stuff, and if it sounds like a good fit for BOA Audio, I will definitely put him on the to-interview list for a future edition of BOA Audio. Once again, thanks for your props about the program, Chris, and thank you for your guest suggestion as well. Next email comes from Joel. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. I was wondering if you could please activate my request for an account on the US of E forums. I'd like to state my gratitude for your Herculean efforts in putting out the BOA Audio podcasts. They have gotten me through many a dreary workday, and the good parade is just so funny and fun. Unfortunately, I unwisely had been listening to it around my 2.5-year-old, and you may be proud to know that you have taught him the word fucking. I laughed, my wife did not. Perhaps Jeremy warned you about Mr. Owl on the Paratopia forums with my rants about woodpeckers. I actually was going to suggest a crypto show about the ivory-billed woodpecker to you, as you seem to be a nature boy like myself. The quote-unquote rediscovery of this thought-to-be-extinct bird has sparked incredible controversy in ornithological and zoologist circles. The story is featured on Netflix in the documentary Ghost Bird. I know it sounds stupid, but I thought it could be the meat-eating horses of Season 7, which is probably my favorite episode of Season 6. Kudos to you. Sincerely, Joel. Thank you for writing in, Joel. Much appreciated. Folks, we'll be happy to know that I did activate Joel's account at the US of E, the official BOA forum. I am terrible at activating those requests because we get inundated with spam accounts, and then I have to sort through the spam accounts and figure out who's spam and who's real. We got a pretty good system going, but sometimes folks have to wait a couple weeks to get activated. So if you have registered for the forums and your account has not been activated in quite some time, or you're still waiting on it, definitely send me an email so I know you're a real person and not a bot, and I will activate your account as soon as possible. Now, with regards to my accidental teaching of your 2.5-year-old the F-word, 1,000 apologies, of course, to your wife. We've had this conversation here at the end of the program before. I just don't think the BOA Audio is appropriate for toddlers to be listening to, and young children. Although I've tried to curb my swearing. I think you'll notice here in this episode with Kendall Carver, there was not a single expletive in the entire 2 hours plus. So I'm doing a pretty good job on that. And your point here about all this kind of raises another issue. And if you got youngsters listening, get them out of the room, folks, because what put me off about last week's show with Neil Arnold is he just pretty much obliterated poor Santa Claus. And I thought about putting a warning in at the beginning of the show that it was not suitable for young children, but I ended up not doing that. And I'm hopeful that the mythos of Santa Claus was not ruined for any young BOA Audio listeners who may have tuned into the Neil Arnold episode. And finally, thank you for this tip on the documentary Ghost Bird. I will definitely look into it. I'll be honest, I certainly would have been very skeptical if someone suggested an I Rebuild Woodpecker edition of the program, but since you seem to suggest that there is quite a rich array of discussion surrounding this whole thing, it's definitely something I'm going to check out. I don't know if it could be the meat-eating horses edition of the program for Season 7, but it certainly would be one for the books if we could really get a full episode out of the Ghost Bird controversy. My only concern is that it's sometimes difficult to track down people who are behind films. Authors and website publishers are easier to track down. Filmmakers sometimes are a little bit harder to get a hold of and get on the program. I've been trying to get the guy behind the Toynbee Tiles film on BOA Audio for quite some time and still can't get a hold of him, so getting the makers of Ghost Bird on the show may prove to be just as difficult a challenge, but I will certainly look into it, and I will definitely watch the film, because it sounds interesting, and we'll try to get a hold of the folks behind Ghost Bird and see if we can get them on the program. So, thank you for writing in, Joel. Once again, sorry about exposing your child to my potty mouth. Sorry for keeping you waiting to get onto the forum. And thank you for the guest suggestion. Final email comes from Steven in Arlington, Texas, and here's what he has to say. Hey dude, I'm just a BOA listener from Texas. I cannot in good conscience listen to another BOA MP3 without sending along a check. Keep up the good work. You mentioned where to send checks at the end of each episode. I'm originally from Chelmsford myself. Great breaking news from Bruce Rux. Best, Steven. In Arlington, Texas. Thank you for writing in, Stephen, and tremendous thanks for your donation to Banal of America. I will be honest with folks, it has been a very tight 6 weeks here at BOA HQ. I ended up having more expenses than I anticipated here this summer, and have really been just getting by for the last few weeks. Hopefully that's going to turn around here as the fall begins, because I've got some good stuff lined up business-wise here in the autumn. But once again, I want to thank Steven and, of course, all the other folks who have donated to Banal of America this summer and this year and in the past in general. Thank you, folks, for helping keep BOA in the black so we can continue providing quality programs to all of you. Steven, if you're ever back in the Chelmsford area, shoot me a line. I'd be happy to go out and grab a beer or three and discuss the crazy world of the paranormal. And on that note, we pull the strings and close up the BOA Audio Listener Feedback Mailbag for this week. Big, big thanks to Steven, Joel, and Chris for writing in. And if you'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, there are a myriad of ways for you to participate. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the contact button. Or while you're there, click the forum button, and that will bring you to the official BOA forum, the US of E.com, theusofe.com. We like to call it BOA's Paranormal Playground. Lots of great discussion going on there with regards to BOA audio as well as the paranormal and pop culture. We have got a fantastic exchange happening with regards to the Neil Arnold interview. Lengthy posts discussing a variety of aspects surrounding the Neil Arnold episode happening at the forum right this very minute. So if you want to join in on that conversation, head on over to the BOA forum. And of course, we are a part of Facebook and Twitter, so just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and you will find my profiles on those sites. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. And if you want additional content from Binall of America, like us on Facebook. Just punch in Binall of America, you'll find our page. Like us, and you'll be given access to a variety of other stuff from BOA. Up next, let's thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. Coming up at the website in the next few days will be an all-new Trickster's Realm from Regan Lee and the long-awaited return of Grey Matters from Leslie. So head on over to Binall of America for those pieces as well as new stuff from the rest of the outstanding BOA staff. Binall of America, make it a part of your search for esoteric enlightenment and entertainment. Now comes the time in the program where I rip off a piece of cardboard, scrawl a message on it, and ask you to make a donation to the BOA franchise. You've already heard me waxing poetic about how it has been a very financially tight month at Binall of America, so any donations that folks could make would be greatly appreciated. There are two ways in which you can help out. You can head on over to Binall of America and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to donate via snail mail, there's also a way to do that as well. You can mail your donations to Tim Binall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. The complete address can be found at Binall of America, right underneath the PayPal button. And if you send us a donation via snail mail, please make it payable to Tim Binall and not Binall of America, because my bank is anal and they will not cash those donations. And please include some form of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for helping BOA. As always, folks, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Binall of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of the program, BOA Audio welcomes doctoral candidate Robbie Graham, who joins us for a discussion on his ongoing research into the portrayal of UFOs in film and television, as well as how pervasive government influence over this content has been over the years. If you are a fan of quality UFO research, then there's a very good chance that you are already familiar with Robbie's outstanding website, Silver Screen Saucers, which contains a wealth of information on UFO films and TV shows, and insights into what really may be going on behind the scenes as these programs and movies are made. I have a very good feeling that the BOA Audio listeners will enjoy this edition of the program quite a bit, because there was really a great connection there between Robbie and I. We're about the same age, we have similar perspectives on the UFO phenomenon, and I wanted to go into the conversation not necessarily throwing a variety of films and TV shows at Robbie Graham and then having him just recite his perspective on these various mediums. I wanted to get behind the whole thing. I really wanted to dig into the overall view of this phenomenon of UFO films and TV shows, and that's what we did in this conversation. As you'll hear Robbie say during the program, he gets into a whole realm of discussion that he has really never done on any program before. So that's something that I think folks will really enjoy quite a bit. That's Robbie Graham talking about his research into UFOs in film and television on the next edition of BOA Audio. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Big, big thanks once again to Kendall Carver for coming on the show. Check out the website, internationalcruisevictims.org. Big thanks to Chris, Joel, and Steven for joining us in BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the people who have stuck around since the very beginning, and the folks who have just discovered the show recently. You guys are the best. Thank you for your support of the program. Thank you for spreading the word about this little underground esoteric audio freak show that is BOA Audio. And, of course, thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Binal, thanking you for listening and signing off.